Sophist. Persons of the dialogue. Theodorus, Theaetetus, Socrates. Analytic stranger, whom Theodorus and Theaetetus bring with them. The younger Socrates, who is a silent auditor.
Here we are, Socrates, true to our agreement of yesterday, and we bring with us a stranger from Elea, who is a disciple of Parmenides and Zeno, and a true philosopher.
Is he not rather a god, Theodorus, who comes to us in the disguise of a stranger? For Homer says that all the gods, and especially the god of strangers, are companions of the meek and just, and visit the good and evil among men. And may not your companion be one of those higher powers, a cross-examining deity, who has come to spy out our weakness in argument, and to cross-examine us?
Nay, Socrates, he is not one of the disputatious sort, he is too good for that, and, in my opinion, he is not a god at all, but divine he certainly is, for this is a title which I should give to all philosophers.
Capital, my friend. And I may add, that they are almost as hard to be discerned as the gods, for the true philosophers, and such as are not merely made up for the occasion, appear in various forms unrecognized by the ignorance of men, and they hover about cities, as Homer declares, looking from above upon human life, and some think nothing of them, and others can never think enough, and sometimes they appear as statesmen, and sometimes as sophists, and then, again, to many they seem to be no better than madmen. I should like to ask our elitic friend, if he would tell us, what is thought about them in Italy, and to whom the terms are applied.
What terms?
Sophist, statesman, philosopher.
What is your difficulty about them, and what made you ask?
I want to know, whether by his countrymen they are regarded as one or two, or do they, as the names are three, distinguish also three kinds, and assign one to each name?
I dare say, that the stranger will not object to discuss the question. What do you say, stranger?
I am far from objecting, Theodorus, nor have I any difficulty in replying that by us they are regarded as three. But to define precisely the nature of each of them is by no means a slight or easy task.
You have happened to light, Socrates, almost on the very question which we were asking our friend, before we came hither. And he excused himself to us, as he does now to you, although he admitted that the matter had been fully discussed, and that he remembered the answer.
Then do not, stranger, deny us the first favor which we ask of you. I am sure, that you will not, and therefore I shall only beg of you to say, whether you like, and are accustomed to make a long oration on a subject which you want to explain to another, or to proceed by the method of question and answer. I remember hearing a very noble discussion in which Parmenides employed the latter of the two methods, when I was a young man, and he was far advanced in years.
I prefer to talk with another when he responds pleasantly, and is light in hand. If not, I would rather have my own say.
Any one of the present company will respond kindly to you, and you can choose whom you like of them. I should recommend you to take a young person, Theaetetus, for example, unless you have a preference for someone else.
I feel ashamed, Socrates, being a newcomer into your society, instead of talking a little and hearing others talk, to be spinning out a long soliloquy or address, as if I wanted to show off, for the true answer will certainly be a very long one, a great deal longer than might be expected from such a short and simple question. At the same time, I fear that I may seem rude and ungracious if I refuse your courteous request, especially after what you have said. For I certainly cannot object to your proposal that Theaetetus should respond, having already conversed with him myself, and being recommended by you to take him.
But are you sure, stranger, that this will be quite so acceptable to the rest of the company as Socrates imagines?
Do you hear them applauding, Theaetetus? After that, there is nothing more to be said. Well then, I am to argue with you, and if you tire of the argument, you may complain of your friends, and not of me.
I do not think that I shall tire, and if I do, I shall get my friend here, young Socrates, the namesake of the elder Socrates, to help. He is about my own age, and my partner at the gymnasium, and is constantly accustomed to work with me.
Very good, you can decide about that for yourself, as we proceed. Meanwhile you, and I will begin together, and inquire into the nature of the sophist, first of the three. I should like you to make out what he is, and bring him to light in a discussion, for at present we are only agreed about the name, but of the thing to which we both apply the name possibly you have one notion, and I another. whereas we ought always to come to an understanding about the thing itself in terms of a definition, and not merely about the name minus the definition. Now the tribe of sophists which we are investigating is not easily caught or defined, and the world has long ago agreed that if great subjects are to be adequately treated, they must be studied in the lesser and easier instances of them before we proceed to the greatest of all. And as I know that the tribe of sophists is troublesome and hard to be caught, I should recommend that we practice beforehand the method which is to be applied to them on some simple and smaller thing, unless you can suggest a better way.
Indeed I cannot.
Then suppose that we work out some lesser example which will be a pattern of the greater.
Good.
What is there which is well known, and not great, and is yet as susceptible of definition, as any larger thing? Shall I say an angler? He is familiar to all of us, and not a very interesting or important person.
He is not.
Yet I suspect that he will furnish us with the sort of definition and line of inquiry which we want.
Very good.
Let us begin by asking whether he is a man having art or not having art, but some other power.
He is clearly a man of art.
And of arts there are two kinds.
What are they?
There is agriculture, and the tending of mortal creatures, and the art of constructing or molding vessels, and there is the art of imitation. All these may be appropriately called by a single name.
What do you mean, and what is the name?
He who brings into existence something that did not exist before is said to be a producer, and that which is brought into existence is said to be produced.
True.
And all the arts which were just now mentioned are characterized by this power of producing.
They are.
Then let us sum them up under the name of productive or creative art.
Very good.
Next follows the whole class of learning and cognition. Then comes trade, fighting, hunting, and, since none of these produces anything, but is only engaged in conquering by word or deed, or in preventing others from conquering things which exist, and have been already produced, in each and all of these branches there appears to be an art which may be called acquisitive.
Yes, that is the proper name.
Seeing, then, that all arts are either acquisitive or creative, in which class shall we place the art of the angler?
Clearly in the acquisitive class.
And the acquisitive may be subdivided into two parts. There is exchange, which is voluntary, and is effected by gifts, hire, purchase, and the other part of acquisitive, which takes by force of word or deed, may be termed conquest.
That is implied in what has been said.
And may not conquest be again subdivided?
How?
Open force may be called fighting, and secret force may have the general name of hunting.
Yes.
And there is no reason why the art of hunting should not be further divided.
How would you make the division?
Into the hunting of living and of lifeless prey.
Yes, if both kinds exist.
Of course they exist, but the hunting, after lifeless things having no special name, except some sorts of diving, and other small matters, may be omitted. The hunting after living things may be called animal hunting.
Yes.
And animal hunting may be truly said to have two divisions, land animal hunting, which has many kinds and names, and water animal hunting, or the hunting after animals who swim.
True.
And of swimming animals, one class lives on the wing, and the other in the water.
Certainly.
Fowling is the general term under which the hunting of all birds is included.
True.
The hunting of animals who live in the water has the general name of fishing.
Yes.
And this sort of hunting may be further divided also into two principal kinds.
What are they?
There is one kind which takes them in nets, another which takes them by a blow.
What do you mean, and how do you distinguish them?
As to the first kind, all that surrounds and encloses anything to prevent egress may be rightly called an enclosure.
Very true.
For which reason twig baskets, casting nets, nooses, creels, and the like may all be termed enclosures.
True.
And therefore this first kind of capture may be called by us capture with enclosures, or something of that sort.
Yes.
The other kind, which is practiced by a blow with hooks and three-pronged spears, when summed up under one name, may be called striking, unless you, Theaetetus, can find some better name.
Never mind the name. What you suggest will do very well.
There is one mode of striking, which is done at night, and by the light of a fire, and is by the hunters themselves called firing, or spearing by firelight.
True.
And the fishing by day is called by the general name of barbing, because the spears, too, are barbed at the point.
Yes, that is the term.
Of this barb fishing, that which strikes the fish, who is below from above is called spearing, because this is the way in which the three-pronged spears are mostly used.
Yes, it is often called so.
Then now there is only one kind remaining.
What is that?
When a hook is used, and the fish is not struck in any chance part of his body, as he is with the spear, but only about the head and mouth, and is then drawn out from below upwards with reeds and rods, what is the right name of that mode of fishing, Theaetetus?
I suspect that we have now discovered the object of our search.
And now you and I have come to an understanding not only about the name of the angler's art, but about the definition of the thing itself. One half of all art was acquisitive. Half of the acquisitive art was conquest, or taking by force. Half of this was hunting, and half of hunting was hunting animals. Half of this was hunting water animals. Of this again, the under half was fishing. Half of fishing was striking. A part of striking was fishing with a barb. And one half of this again, being the kind which strikes with a hook, and draws the fish from below upwards, is the art which we have been seeking, and which from the nature of the operation is denoted angling, or drawing up.
The result has been quite satisfactorily brought out.
And now, following this pattern, let us endeavor to find out what a sophist is.
By all means.
The first question about the angler was, whether he was a skilled artist, or unskilled.
True.
And shall we call our new friend unskilled, or thorough master of his craft?
Certainly not unskilled, for his name, as, indeed, you imply, must surely express his nature.
Then he must be supposed to have some art.
What art?
By heaven, they are cousins. It never occurred to us.
Who are cousins?
The angler and the sophist.
In what way are they related?
They both appear to me to be hunters.
How the sophist, of the other we have spoken.
You remember our division of hunting, into hunting after swimming animals and land animals.
Yes.
And you remember that we subdivided the swimming and left the land animals, saying that there were many kinds of them.
Certainly.
Thus far, then, the sophist and the angler, starting from the art of acquiring, take the same road.
So it would appear.
Their paths diverge when they reach the art of animal hunting, the one going to the seashore, and to the rivers, and to the lakes, and angling for the animals which are in them.
Very true.
While the other goes to land and water of another sort, rivers of wealth, and broad meadowlands of generous youth, and he also is intending to take the animals which are in them.
What do you mean?
Of hunting on land there are two principal divisions.
What are they?
One is the hunting of tame, and the other of wild animals.
But are tame animals ever hunted?
Yes, if you include man under tame animals, but, if you like, you may say that there are no tame animals, or that, if there are, man is not among them, or you may say that man is a tame animal, but is not hunted. You shall decide which of these alternatives you prefer.
I should say, stranger, that man is a tame animal, and I admit that he is hunted.
Then let us divide the hunting of tame animals into two parts.
How shall we make the division?
Let us define piracy, man-stealing, tyranny, the whole military art, by one name, as hunting with violence.
Very good.
But the art of the lawyer, of the popular orator, and the art of conversation may be called in one word the art of persuasion.
True.
And of persuasion, there may be said to be two kinds.
What are they?
One is private, and the other public.
Yes, each of them forms a class.
And of private hunting, one sort receives hire, and the other brings gifts.
I do not understand you.
You seem never to have observed the manner in which lovers hunt.
To what do you refer?
I mean, that they lavish gifts on those whom they hunt in addition to other inducements.
Most true.
Let us admit this, then, to be the amatory art.
Certainly.
But that sort of hireling whose conversation is pleasing, and who baits his hook only with pleasure, and exacts nothing but his maintenance in return, we should all, if I am not mistaken, describe as possessing flattery, or an art of making things pleasant.
Certainly.
And that sort, which professes to form acquaintances only for the sake of virtue, and demands a reward in the shape of money, may be fairly called by another name.
To be sure.
And what is the name, will you tell me?
It is obvious enough, for I believe that we have discovered the sophist, which is, as I conceive, the proper name for the class described.
And now, Theaetetus, his art may be traced, as a branch of the appropriative, acquisitive family, which hunts animals, living, land, tame animals, which hunts man, privately, for hire, taking money in exchange, having the semblance of education, and this is termed sophistry, and is a hunt, after young men of wealth and rank, such is the conclusion.
Just so.
Let us take another branch of his genealogy, for he is a professor of a great and many-sided art, and if we look back at what has preceded we see that he presents another aspect besides that of which we are speaking.
In what respect?
There were two sorts of acquisitive art, the one concerned with hunting, the other with exchange.
There were.
And of the art of exchange there are two divisions, the one of giving, and the other of selling.
Let us assume that.
Next, we will suppose the art of selling to be divided into two parts.
How?